I'm so glad that Joel Rosenberg is with us. I get emails from people before Joel appears, while Joel is with us, and after Joel is here, because so many people just appreciate all that he has done. Love his work with the Joshua Fund, where he really shows the love of Christ through that marvelous ministry to people throughout the Middle East. But also, Joel does a marvelous job really giving us an upbeat on what is happening in that part of the world. And Joel, I hope you got retreads on your tennies, because so much is happening in the Middle East now. It is unbelievable. You just wrote a piece. It is actually hot off your press, and it deals with the subject of Muammar Gaddafi. That, you know, for most Americans who don't even know where some of these countries are in the map because they don't have a need to have to know why they're there, they have a difficult time following who Gaddafi is, what our relationship is in terms of diplomacy and geopolitics. So give us a backgrounder, if you will, on who he is and from your vantage point, what he is.
Sure, Janet. Good to be with you again. This is really a very serious and horrific situation going on inside Libya. You essentially have a full-blown civil war there. You know, what we wondered might happen in Egypt didn't really erupt in the same way as it has happened next door to Egypt in Libya. And what you have in Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, who's been in power almost as long as I've been alive. I'm 43. He's been in power for 41 years, but he is an evil, brutal tyrant. He is a virulent opponent of Christianity. He hates Israel with a passion. He's a supporter and proponent of terrorism, going back to the 1980s, for example, earlier, but certainly in the 1980s when it was Libya that was responsible for the bombing of Pan Am 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. I happened to be at Syracuse University at that time, and almost more than three dozen Syracuse students were on that plane, murdered by Gaddafi's regime. As you recall, President Reagan was decisive. He didn't wonder what he should do. He sent in the Air Force, and he bombed Libya, and that backed Gaddafi off for a number of years. But it didn't change who he is, and he is guilty of slaughtering thousands of I wouldn't even call him his people, God's people in Libya. And he calls himself the King of Kings in yes. direct defiance of Jesus Christ. And not just that he calls it himself, he's persuaded hundreds of African leaders to also call him King of Kings. He is in direct defiance of the true King of Kings, Jesus Christ, and it's time for him to go. The question, of course, is how, but let's just start with, you know, this is a tyrant. He is evil. Libya is significantly and prominently described in end times Bible prophecy as being engaged in more evil in the last days. Whether it's going to be under Gaddafi's rule or not, we don't know yet. But it is it's time for him to go. It is the time for the world to coalesce against him and help the Libyan people be liberated. And it's time for the church to get the gospel into Libya and to strengthen the persecuted church as never before.
Well, let me go to the church. Right now, as things stand, we've been watching all of these countries in the Middle East, particularly, Joel, where there are blasphemy laws already on the books. What is the status if you come to Christ in Libya? What happens to you as a Christian?
Well, legally, you'll be executed. There's no tolerance. It doesn't mean that it happens every time. But I'll tell you, this has been one of the most severe regimes against Christianity. I mean, I don't even have a good handle, even talking to a number of friends and allies who love Libya, who pray for Libya, who have sought to reach Libya with the gospel. I don't have a good sense even how many believers there are in that country of North Africa, whereas, for example, in Egypt, to its immediate neighbor to the east, there are well over 2.5 million followers of Jesus Christ. And to the west, the immediate neighbor is Algeria. And Algeria has well over 80,000 followers of Christ. Again, not nearly what Egypt has, but that's been growing from almost none maybe 15, 20 years ago. So there's a spiritual awakening going on in Algeria, which is not a friendly country either. And there's something, you know, wonderful and historic going on in Egypt, but in Libya, my goodness, is it in the hundreds of believers, maybe the thousands. We just don't know because it's been sealed like a drum for so long.
Wow.
And I think this unrest that we're seeing is helping to crack open that society. And again, you and I have talked about this with regards to Egypt and other places in the region, but when we see reformers passionate about changing their country and willing to die for that, when we see radicals passionate about their version of what they think utopia would look like or their vision of the future, and they're willing to die for it, you know, we need to stand with the church in Libya and with believers who have a passion to reach Libya with the gospel and do everything we can to help them. There aren't a lot of plans on the shelf to know how to get the gospel in there, but satellite television, radio, the internet, social networking, Bible smuggling, you know, these are the type of things I describe in my book, Inside the Revolution. We need to, I want to encourage all of your listeners to really be praying about how to be helpful to ministries that do this. The Joshua Fund, Libya is outside of our immediate budget range. In other words, we focus on Israel, the Palestinians, and on countries that directly touch Israel. And we have a special opening in Iraq that we have chosen to use. But we don't have the resources to go as far as Libya. Other ministries can, and I would encourage people to pray about how they can be helpful.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. One last question, and there's so many parts of the Middle East I want to talk about with you, Joel. But going back to Libya, I watch those in authority. And by the way, this is such a profound reminder to pray for those in authority. These are very difficult decisions. And so the United States' position is unclear at this point. I mean, we've had a kind of relationship before. We've welcomed Muammar Gaddafi in years past. We've lifted embargoes. Now we look at this nation and we know that there's unrest. And a couple of things immediately come to mind. Number one, we know that they're rebels. Who are they? Not unlike Cairo, who's going to take up residency should they move Gaddafi out of his position of authority? And secondarily, you and I both know in Washington, there's a lot of conversation right now about whether or not something known as a no-fly zone would be established, which would necessarily be a precursor to some kind of military involvement. So first, the concept of who are the rebels, Joel? And second, what would happen if a no-fly zone were in fact declared?
Well, those are all murky. You know, I concede that. I'm still trying to get my handle. I get a handle on who the rebels are themselves. I'm intrigued and I guess encouraged to a degree by the leadership we're seeing out of France and Great Britain. Not really out of Washington right now, but I don't mean to be particularly critical of the Obama administration. Just to be honest, it's a very difficult circumstance. But you're watching French President Nicolas Sarkozy and British Prime Minister David Cameron, and they've laid out a letter, which I have the full text linked on my blog at joelrosenberg.com. So you can read, and they walk through a number of points, I think it's 7 or 8 points of real specificity of what they think can and should happen in Libya at this point. They have decided to endorse and recognize a group that they believe are, you know, sort of pro-democracy, anti-Gaddafi opposition forces. I'm just beginning to get my, you know, get a sense of who these people are. I'm willing to go with their approach at this point, which is we got to get rid of Gaddafi. That being said, moving to the no-fly zone issue, what I read about today is. The Heritage Foundation has an excellent analysis that they've just posted, and I have to agree with it. Though it will sound like I'm, you know, maybe weaker on this issue than some might have seen me in other arenas. And let me be clear on that. I think we should help the rebels take down Gaddafi, and then we need to pick our way through, you know, and see who we can support and who we would want to oppose. But because you have basically the danger that a genocide is going to set into motion. You know, it's not what happened in Egypt, you know, a few weeks ago when you and I kept talking about that. You didn't see the military crushing people by the thousands, bombing civilians, strafing them with jets. I mean, this is going to become a genocide. The United States and NATO, in my view, shouldn't get directly militarily involved. No-fly zones, sending in troops. I think that would bog us down in a civil war that we're not quite sure exactly who, you know, how that's all going to play out. And honestly, well, it's not a vital American interest, stability in Libya. That can sound cold. It is a huge interest in terms of the church. Every one of the Libyan people deserve the gospel of Jesus Christ and deserve to be liberated from tyranny. Whether or not the United States and NATO, it's their role or our role to literally go in and with troops or with jets and do that liberation, I think it's not in our interest right now in terms of that level of commitment. We have other interests, like countering Iran's nuclear program, making sure that Israel is protected, you know, making sure that Iraq stays stable and that we defeat the Taliban and al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, protecting the free flow of oil and energy supplies out of the Gulf and the Arabian Peninsula. Those are vital American interests. This is an American interest, but I don't think it's vital. Now, preventing genocide is, and that's where I think you could take Reagan's approach during the Afghan war, you know, 30 years ago, right? The Soviets invaded. We thought, well, we're not going to go head-to-head with the Soviets in Afghanistan with ground troops. But we provided money, intelligence, communications equipment, weapons, and helped the rebels fight back and eventually topple the Soviet invaders. And that worked for a season. Is it perfect? No, it's not. It is a very tragic situation. Bottom line, Jana, I think we need to help Libyans have the ability, the means to defend themselves against genocide. I don't think we should have a full U.S. or NATO, you know, involvement in trying to liberate that country. It's not our top priority at a time when we're stretched thin.
Mm-hmm. Joel, I mean, this is the first time you and I are talking about this, and it's interesting because I agree completely with you. And in those other areas, that's what I want to address when we come back. For example, today, there's some very uncomfortable news coming out of Saudi Arabia. I want to ask you to address that, what that means, and why. This is unprecedented, and for the believer, this is a very exciting time and one that should drive you deeper into his word. Why are we seeing so many of these countries foment at exactly the right time? Is there a universal catalyst, or is this God's timing, or is there a spirit of rebellion that's just being transmitted from country to country? I want to get your take on this. So, Joel, let's start our conversation there. This is the major exporter of Wahhabism. It's also hugely important when it comes to oil, and we're already hurting at the gas tanks. In fact, the unrest today caused the Dow to plummet over 200 points. So what happens there has an impact here, even if you're not attention. So my question to you is, why the unrest in Saudi Arabia right now, and how heavy-handed do you think that government will be?
Well, that's a great question. This is serious because we got to create some categories in our own minds about what's happening here. Egypt was, under Mubarak, was an ally of the United States, helpful to us on many, many important fronts in a difficult region, but you had a dictator, an authoritarian dictator. So that's a problem. Okay, got it. Saudis. The Saudis are run by, it's a kingdom, the House of Saud. They and these leaders are authoritarian dictators also. They're not warm and cozy. They don't. You can't build a church. You can't meet and follow Jesus there. People do. There's over 100,000 followers of Christ in Saudi Arabia, but women can't drive. They can't even wear what they want to wear. They can't. There are so many really evil elements of the Saudi regime and the legal system there under Sharia law. It's a nightmare, and yet they're an ally. So it makes it difficult because in the case of Iran, you have an evil regime and they're an enemy. So you definitely want to overthrow those guys and do everything mm-hmm. you can. And the Gaddafi, he's an evil tyrant, and he's an enemy. So you do want to do everything you can to overthrow him. Saudi's difficult. And look, on pure principle, we want the Saudi regime to change and to the country to be liberalized and to have true reformers take over that country. How do you get there?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't personally believe it's going to happen until Jesus reigns for 1,000 years, but I may not be the sharpest guy on this program in the history of all the guests you've had. So let me just say, I don't know how we move the Saudis in the right direction. We don't want to pull the rug out from under them. I know the people who've heard me over on your show the last few months, if they're not listening carefully, they could say, well, wait a minute, you want the Iranians to go down, the regime, and Gaddafi to go down, but you were a little cautious on Mubarak. Yeah, because when you've got a friend, I mean an ally, not a friend, but an ally who's being helpful to you on many fronts but is going in the wrong direction, then you want to, you need to firmly but in a friendly way try to move them in the right direction, not pull the rug out from under them. The Saudis, you know, you think oil prices are expensive now. Oil will soar to $200, $300, $400 a barrel if the Saudi regime falls to Al-Qaeda rebels or that type of situation. Should they be shooting people? Absolutely not. And the United States government needs to be firm on principle. You're an ally, but you cannot, you know, you cannot shoot your own people. This is wrong.
Yeah. You know, Joel, the way that you've been explaining this to people who love the Lord and who really do understand his sovereignty and his power and his authority, we have to be praying because these are very, very difficult circumstances. And, you know, when you were talking about our relationship with Saudi Arabia, this one is particularly difficult because of this economic linkage that we have. I heard somebody in Washington say once, when you disagree with someone, you need to look at them as an 80% friend, not a 20% enemy. And there might be some wisdom in that. All I know is these are huge issues, but we serve a huge God. So we need to go to him and ask for his guidance and his protection and absolute discernment bequeathed to those in authority. You know, Paul knew exactly what he was saying under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit to Timothy. When you take apart many of these complex issues, whether it's pastors talking, which is what James McDonald was talking about, or whether or not it's leaders, political leaders, literally around the world dealing with unrest and human rights violations, they need the Lord. And that's where you and I come in. We'll see you next time, friends.